Welcome to Alchemist Tribune Deep Dives, hosted by the Academic Renegade. We're here to share insights and analysis from the latest articles in the Alchemist Tribune. Each week, we explore how doctorate holders are transforming academic expertise into entrepreneurial success. Let's dive in.
You work so hard to earn a doctorate, years of research, pushing yourself to the limit, and even then you can still get that feeling, that voice whispering, was it all just luck? Do I really deserve to be here? That's the core of imposter syndrome. And it's surprisingly common, especially in academia.
The academy is like a pressure cooker. The constant need to be an expert, to publish groundbreaking stuff, can really fuel that feeling of not being good enough. So today we're going to dive deep into navigating imposter syndrome, a doctorate's roadmap to entrepreneurial confidence. We're going to try to uncover some practical strategies to deal with these feelings.
And the author makes a really interesting point. Early on, nearly 70% of people experience imposter syndrome at some point in their lives. So first off, you are not alone. It's not some weird quirk. It's a pretty normal human experience.
Okay, that is reassuring. But what exactly is imposter syndrome?
We all have moments where we feel unsure, right?
Totally. But imposter syndrome is more than just a fleeting feeling of insecurity. It's this persistent feeling of being a fraud. You're going to be found out any minute. You might achieve amazing things, but you attribute it all to luck or something outside of yourself.
You just constantly fear being exposed as a fake. I could see how that would be pretty crippling, especially for someone with a doctorate where your identity is so tied to being intelligent.
Exactly. And it's not just a mental game. It really can mess with you, lead to anxiety, burnout, even depression. It can stop you from taking risks, putting your ideas out there, and basically reaching your potential.
So how can we tell if it's more than just a little case of the nerves? Are there any warning signs to watch for?
The article actually outlines some really helpful indicators. For example, do you find yourself always downplaying your achievements? Like saying it was just luck, or that you got a ton of help? Or maybe you have this big fear of failure, and you avoid new challenges because you're scared of being seen as incompetent.
Wow, that's hitting close to home. I remember feeling that way early in my career, second-guessing every choice, convinced I was going to get called out for not knowing enough.
That's a classic example. And the author stresses how important it is to normalize these feelings, to realize you're not the only one going through this. That's like the first step to tackling it.
Okay, enough dwelling on the problem. Let's get to the good stuff. What can we actually do to fight back against this imposter syndrome thing?
The article lays out 5 core strategies, and the best part is they're all actionable. Things you can start using right away. So, listeners, grab a pen and paper because you'll want to take notes. First up, the success journal. Seems pretty simple, but I'm curious how it helps with imposter syndrome.
The idea is to fight those negative thoughts by creating a record of your wins. Every time you achieve something, big or small, write it down. Finished a chapter of your dissertation, got good feedback on a presentation, landed that grant, write it down.
Got it. It's building a defense against your inner critics.
So, the next time that voice pops up and says, you're not good enough, you can pull out your journal and be like, nope, wrong. Look at the evidence.
I do wonder if there's a risk of focusing too much on achievements and not enough on learning from setbacks.
That's a good point. It's not about ignoring challenges, it's about having something to look at that reminds you what you're capable of. And that actually leads nicely into the next strategy. Reframing negative thoughts.
Okay, so instead of beating ourselves up over every little mistake, we should try to change how we think about them. But how do you actually do that? Seems a little, I don't know, abstract.
It's about becoming aware of those automatic negative thoughts and then consciously choosing to swap them out for something more positive and realistic. So instead of thinking, I'm going to bomb this presentation, you can try shifting to, I've prepared really well, and I'm going to do my best to share my research.
So basically going from I can't to I'm capable. As someone who spent years in academia where it's all about critical analysis, wouldn't that feel a bit forced? Like we're ignoring real problems.
It's not about pretending everything's perfect. It's about approaching challenges with a more positive, constructive mindset. It's realizing that you might not have all the answers.
That makes sense. Those cognitive therapy things I've read about. And the more you practice reframing those negative thoughts, the easier it becomes. It's like training your brain to focus on solutions instead of problems.
So we've got our success journal for tracking wins, and we're working on changing those negative thoughts. What's next on the list?
Setting realistic goals is number 3. This is super important for people who are used to working really hard, like a lot of folks with doctorates.
Imagine training for a marathon, right? You wouldn't just run 26 miles on day one. No way, you'd break it down into some smaller chunks.
So how does that apply to tackling imposter syndrome?
It's about taking those huge, scary goals and breaking them down into small, more manageable steps.
So instead of saying, I need to publish this groundbreaking paper by next month, you might say, okay, I'll finish the literature review this week, or I'll submit the paper to one journal by the end of the month. Each small win helps you gain momentum, and it combats that overwhelmed feeling that can feed imposter syndrome.
So instead of trying to jump over the whole mountain, we're taking it one step at a time, which leads us to strategy number four, consistency and patience.
I have a feeling this one is especially important in academia, where things can move pretty slowly.
You got that right. Overcoming imposter syndrome isn't like a one-time fix. It's an ongoing process, a journey with its own ups and downs. That's where consistency and, very importantly, patience come in. Consistency doesn't mean being perfect, right? It's about showing up and doing the work, even when that little imposter syndrome voice is nagging at you.
Exactly. And being patient with yourself, understanding that progress isn't always a straight line, you'll have setbacks, moments of doubt, and that's totally okay. The important thing is to keep moving forward, even if it's just tiny steps, and to celebrate every milestone you hit. Like some days you might plow through hours of research, and other days maybe you just manage to read one article. The main thing is to keep engaging with the process, even when it feels tough. And over time, all those small efforts really add up. So be kind to yourself, acknowledge your hard work, and trust that you're heading in the right direction.
Okay, we're at the final strategy now. What's the last piece of this imposter syndrome puzzle?
The article puts a lot of emphasis on the power of community. Because honestly, it can feel pretty lonely at times. We all need a support system, people who believe in us, who can offer encouragement and a listening ear when those doubts start swirling. It reminds me of that saying, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together.
So how do we build that kind of supportive community?
Especially in academia, which can feel competitive, everyone focused on themselves. It's about actively looking for those connections, whether it's mentors, peers, or even online groups, where you can share experiences and support each other. So let's break down those different support systems, starting with mentors.
I'm picturing someone who's, you know, been there, done that, and can offer advice based on their own journey. Someone who can say, hey, I've been in your shoes, and here's what helped me.
That's a great way to think about it. A mentor can give you valuable insights, challenge those limiting beliefs, and remind you of your strengths when you forget them. That is why the Academic Renegade Alchemist Plus was originally created.
And you might be surprised how many people are willing to help. You just have to ask. So don't be shy about reaching out to those professors you admire, the researchers whose work inspires you. What's the worst that could happen? They say no.
Exactly. And even then, you've gained experience by putting yourself out there.
But it doesn't always have to be someone way ahead of you in their career. Sometimes just having a friend, a fellow student, who's going through similar things can make all the difference.
Oh yeah, peer support is so important. You can celebrate each other's successes, vent about frustrations, and help each other come up with solutions.
It's like a buddy system for navigating the ups and downs of academic life.
I love that. A buddy system for the imposter syndrome jungle.
And then there's networking, which I'll admit can feel a bit scary, especially for us introverts. The key is to think about networking as a chance to build real connections, to find your people, those who get your passions and challenges. It's not about collecting business cards or trying to impress everybody. It's about finding those genuine connections that offer support and encouragement. And one of the best ways to deal with that isolated feeling that comes with imposter syndrome is to just talk about it. Share your experiences with other people.
You'll probably find that you're not alone.
Totally. Talking about it normalizes the experience and helps you realize that even the most successful people sometimes struggle with self-doubt.
So find those safe spaces, those communities where you can be open and connect with others and build that support network that's going to help you thrive.
This article is really highlighting the power of community, isn't it? It's like Oprah always says, surround yourself with only people who are going to lift you higher. So we've got our toolkit with five great strategies. The Success Journal, changing negative thoughts, setting realistic goals, being consistent and patient, and building a supportive community.
But there's another element the article dives into, and that's the whole idea of shifting your perspective. Because sometimes it's not just about what you do, but how you see things, right? Especially when it comes to failure, and learning to look at failure differently, especially in academia, can be really empowering.
In academia, failure's like, it's not really celebrated, is it? There's this huge pressure to publish, get those grants, be seen as the expert. So I'm really curious how the article tackles this whole idea of failure.
Yeah, it does a really good job of reframing it, actually. Instead of seeing failure as a sign that you're not good enough, the author encourages you to see it as part of the learning process. Think about it. Every successful researcher, every scientist who made a breakthrough, they all faced tons of setbacks along the way. Those failures, a lot of times, they're what lead to the biggest discoveries.
Okay, yeah, I see what you mean. So instead of getting all caught up in beating yourself up when things don't work out, you can ask, what did I learn? What could I do differently next time? It's you're taking the sting out of failure and turning it into useful information.
Exactly. It's like you running an experiment in the lab, right? You wouldn't expect every single trial to be perfect. You'd look at the data, see what worked, what didn't, and then adjust your approach. Same thing with our own personal and professional journeys. Every setback, it's a chance to get better, to learn and grow.
And that's exactly how reframing failure can lead to growth. The article actually suggests taking this a step further. It talks about the importance of regular self-reflection, not just analysing setbacks when they happen, but taking time to look back at your experiences, both good and bad, and trying to spot patterns.
So it's not about dwelling on the past or blaming yourself for mistakes, but more about gaining a deeper understanding of your strengths, weaknesses, and where you can improve. I can see how that would be especially useful for someone with a doctorate, because critical analysis is like second nature to them.
Exactly. You've spent years honing those analytical skills, breaking down complex ideas, drawing conclusions from data. Now you can use those same skills to look at your own experiences. Ask yourself, how do I usually react to challenges? What patterns do I see in my successes and failures? What can I learn from all of this to do better moving forward?
It's like you're taking those analytical skills and turning them inward, right? Using them to get to know yourself better and deal with those imposter syndrome moments.
That's it. And this kind of leads to developing what's called a growth mindset. Basically, it's the belief that your abilities aren't fixed, that you can improve them through effort, hard work, and being open to learning.
So instead of seeing challenges as threats to your ego or intelligence, you see them as chances to learn and expand your skills. I imagine that's a pretty important shift for anyone, but especially in academia, where the whole point is to constantly be learning.
Absolutely. When you have a growth mindset, you approach challenges with curiosity, a desire to learn, instead of being afraid and doubting yourself. Setbacks become temporary obstacles, not these permanent roadblocks.
So we've talked about reframing failure and developing a growth mindset. But I'm wondering, is there a specific connection between these concepts and the experiences of someone who has a doctorate? The article doesn't specifically say, but it makes me think about how rigorous the doctorate process is, all that analytical thinking. All those years spent making hypotheses, designing experiments, analyzing data, coming to evidence-based conclusions, those skills, that critical thinking mindset, that could be your secret weapon against imposter syndrome.
That's interesting. You're saying instead of letting those tendencies make you doubt yourself, you can use them to actually assess your progress, figure out where you can grow, and come up with strategies for those challenges.
Yeah, exactly. It's about taking those analytical superpowers and turning them into tools to help you improve. And remember, this is a journey. It's ongoing. Personal growth never really ends. It's about showing up every day, embracing the process, and always trying to be better.
Okay, so we've explored how reframing failure and cultivating a growth mindset can help us deal with those imposter syndrome waves. But the article also goes into something else that can have a big impact on this whole process.
You're talking about the importance of having a strong support network.
Yes, and the author points out three key ways to build this network: finding mentors, connecting with peers, and actively participating in networking opportunities. Let's start with mentors. When you think about someone who's been there, done that, and can give you guidance based on their own experience, what comes to mind?
Yeah, for someone in academia, a mentor could be like a professor who's really inspired you, or a researcher whose work you admire, even a former classmate who's a few steps ahead of you career-wise. The important thing is finding someone you can learn from, someone who pushes you to grow and offers support along the way.
And they don't have to be like a superstar in their field, right? It could be someone who's just gone through similar challenges and can share what they learned.
Exactly. And even then, at least you put yourself out there, right?
True. And sometimes a mentor doesn't even have to be someone you have a formal relationship with. It could be a colleague, a friend, even a family member who understands your goals and is there to support you.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Expanding that idea of mentorship beyond the traditional way of thinking about it. But what about peer support? How does connecting with others who are going through the same stuff help with imposter syndrome?
Peer support is huge because it gives you that sense of a shared experience. You can celebrate wins together, complain about the tough times, and help each other figure things out. It's like having a study group, but for dealing with the challenges of academia and life in general. It's like those late-night study sessions, except this time you're tackling imposter syndrome together. Right?
Exactly. And it's not just about complaining. Peers can also challenge your negative beliefs, give you different perspectives, and keep you accountable to your goals. So we've got mentors to guide us, peers to support us, and then there's networking. I'll be honest, that one still makes me nervous, especially in academia, where it could feel competitive.
Yeah, I get it. Think about those conferences you go to, those workshops. Instead of seeing them as just professional obligations, think of them as chances to connect with people who get you, share experiences, and maybe even start some long-lasting friendships or collaborations.
For someone with a doctorate, those events could be extra intimidating. You're surrounded by all these brilliant people, groundbreaking research, and it's easy to compare yourself and think everyone else is so much smarter and more accomplished.
That's so true. But here's the thing. Everyone, even those seemingly confident presenters and published authors, they have their own insecurities too. A lot of times, the best way to deal with feeling isolated and inadequate is to just talk about it. Share what you're going through.
Oh yeah, that's been my experience too. When I've opened up about struggling with imposter syndrome, people are often like, me too, I thought I was the only one. It's amazing how sharing those vulnerable parts of yourself can connect you with others.
For sure, and it's not just about commiserating. Sharing those experiences can lead to deeper conversations, supportive relationships, and a sense of community that really helps you thrive.
Okay, so we've talked about finding mentors, connecting with peers, and embracing those networking opportunities to build a solid support system. But before we wrap up this deep dive, I want to go back to something the article really emphasized.
You mean the idea that imposter syndrome, as tough as it is, doesn't have to control you? That you can learn to manage it and even use it to your advantage?
Exactly. Because here's the thing, sometimes those same qualities that make us susceptible to imposter syndrome are also our biggest strengths.
That's such a great point. It's instead of letting those qualities hold you back, you can actually use them to push yourself forward. Think about it. That attention to detail, the drive to always be better, the ability to see things from different angles, those are all amazing assets if you know how to use them.
The article doesn't specifically ask this, but it makes me wonder, what if those analytical skills you've developed, maybe through your doctorate, could actually be your secret weapon in fighting imposter syndrome?
Now, that's a powerful way to look at it. Instead of letting those analytical tendencies make you doubt yourself, you can use them to look at your progress objectively, see where you can grow, and come up with ways to overcome challenges.
It's like turning your inner critic into an inner coach, right? Someone who's there to guide you, support you, and help you reach your full potential.
Yeah, exactly. It's about using the power of your mind, your analytical skills, your critical thinking to your advantage. So we've covered a lot of ground today.
We've explored what imposter syndrome is, why it happens, and most importantly, what we can do about it. We've got our toolkit of strategies, we're learning to see things differently, and we're building those supportive connections. But at the end of the day, it really comes down to this. It's your journey.
You define what success means to you. Embrace your unique strengths and celebrate every step you take. And remember, you're not alone. Tons of people, especially those with doctorates, have been through this and come out stronger, more confident, and ready to make a difference.
We hope this deep dive is giving you the tools and inspiration to deal with those imposter syndrome waves. Remember, you have the power to achieve amazing things.
Thanks for joining us on Alchemist Tribune Deep Dives. We're the Academic Renegade crew, reminding you that your doctorate is more than a degree. It's your launchpad to entrepreneurial success. For more insights, visit us at the Alchemist Tribune, where we're bridging the gap between academia and enterprise. Until next time, keep innovating.